Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
E-class.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
One last save and a scramble by Raz. The clock shows zeros. Raz is helmetless, but unbound because his team has won game number one.
Boy, Tuukka Rask made a great save. I believe off of Braden Shen standing in front of the net. It is a celebratory song tonight because they have come from 2-0 down to win this game by a score of 4-2.
Yeah, my lead thought on that is, does that leave a mark on the Blues? We walk in here, take a 2-0 lead in the second period, and they don't win it. Was that their game? Was that their chance to take one in Boston? And like Carolina, whose best chance was in game one, they lost game one and never really got their traction. And the part of me that wants a competitive series worries about that a little bit. But I'm not Wilson past the graveyard. I think St. Louis is a much better team than Carolina and has much more going for it. So I don't think this is over. I don't think it's a sweep. But however, if you're St. Louis, you say to yourself, we had them 2-0.
That was a giveaway.
We had them 2-0. And is that your chance? Are they going to get a better chance than that to take one in Boston here?
Probably not. I would think not.
I wonder. So that's just my lead thought. Well, you know what that means going forward. Is that the kind of loss that has an impact there going forward for the Blues?
So look, this is where you find out. I mean, I have a hard time believing, though, you get this far, like the Blues have, and just one game like that you pack it in. Like, I need to see more. I was disappointed in what we saw from the Blues last night. I expected the rust. And when I say disappointed, I mean that I thought they were better than that. The quality of play was ordinary, is how I would put it. There was nothing really special about them at all.
Yeah, but the reason I don't expect them to pack it in like Carolina did, it's one of the things that Olczyk said when he joined you guys yesterday, saying that these teams mirror each other. And one of the things that I think that they mirror each other with is that resiliency. Because I thought they would be cooked after that hand pass thing against the Sharks. Most teams after that, and you see how Binnington and some of those players reacted, yelling at the refs. It's like, okay, this thing's over. And instead, they ended up outscoring San Jose 12-2 in the following games and wrapped up the series. So I think that they have that thing, too. So I don't expect them to fold up and die and get swept here.
Okay. Those are just the lead little thought here at 4 o'clock. We'll get back to your thoughts right here. Bob in Somerville, what were your thoughts on game one?
Hi, Mike. Hi, guys. I thought a couple of things. I thought when the Bruins got their sea legs, when they tied the game up, in particular the fourth and third lines were able to play down below the goal line. St. Louis's defense, I thought, they had cement. They were turning around, throwing the puck up the boards. If you look back at the winning goal, the Bruins were able to get the puck off the boards and keep it in. And I think if you push the puck below the goal line and cycle, I don't think St. Louis's team is the defense is that fast, and I think you can beat them there.
Cole, let me just stop you there. Maz, you agree with that 100%?
I do. I think there's some truth to that. Yeah,
you said that before the game.
Yes. I mean, look, their speed, if their D has speed, and again, the terms that both Eddie Olczyk used yesterday, and I remember if it was Kevin Weeks or Beers or whoever, or DuPont, mobility. They said mobility, but it feels to me like it's straight ahead, like they can skate forward. But if you ask them to be agile, they are going to have a hard time. And I thought that the guys that were effective for the Bruins last night were the smaller, shiftier play. Johansson was dynamite in that game. And Marchand, once he got past the first period, was pretty good. And Corrali was obviously a pain in the ass for them all night. But I think that if you can make them kind of chase around a little bit in that zone, they're going to have trouble.
But it's also, who are you targeting? And we mentioned this, that third pair, like most teams.
Yeah, this was obvious too, yeah.
Pretty good drop-off. Gunnarsson, number four. They picked on him. He was a -2. And Bortuzzo, that's their third pair. Bortuzzo and Carl Gunnarsson. They were combined minus three. And Gunnarsson was on there for really maybe the two biggest goals of the night. The Clifton goal that got him on the board. And then the game winner by Corrali. You know, by comparison, Bouwmeester's a plus two. And Parayko's a plus one. So I think it sort of shows you where that fault line is. And you get this is... And I haven't gone back to look exactly how much time Johansson had on that third pair, but that was my thought going in. My sleeper MVP for the series was Johansson because I thought Coyle Johansson should be up against that third D pair, which is a big drop off on that Blues team.
Well, and that's where all the advantages came for the Bruins last night, right? The deeper you get down the roster, the more the Bruins dominated.
That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And so the third and fourth lines, I mean, as the caller just said, that's where you had the biggest advantage. So when those guys were on the ice, and look, I'm eager to see whether the Blues guys respond. When Bozak was with Toronto, he was a good player. So he was another guy. I didn't notice him last night. There was one time I saw him on the ice for a faceoff. You know, Tyler Bozak, but he and O'Reilly, I don't really remember seeing much in that game last night at all.
We've got Chris and Revere. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, hey guys, I agree with you. I think St. Louis is getting back a defenseman, Vince Dunn, in the next couple of games. He's a pretty good mobile defenseman to move the puck up. So I think people start saying about the Bruins sweeping. I think that's a little crazy.
Okay, I think that's a factor. The Dunn kid's supposed to be pretty good. And an upgrade over what they have out there. So let's see what they look like when he's out there.
Yeah, it's too early. I mean, again, just one game into the series here. And again, they had 5 days off, too. Like, so the idea that the Blues were going to come out and be gangbusters the whole 60 minutes, I don't think that was really realistic either.
One of the things we were talking about last night, just sort of a sidebar topic, the flag waving thing. They had the 2011 Bruins up there waving the flag to bring the team out onto the ice. And no Tim Thomas. And I said, this is a shame. This guy should be a giant in this town. He should be there. He should be the only one waving that flag. Would blow the roof off the building if he would come back, especially if it's a little bit of a surprise because no one knows where the guy is. Last year, heard was Idaho. He was in the bunker in Colorado. Apparently, he didn't take well to the altitude, or his family didn't take well to the altitude in Colorado, so he moved to Idaho, and no one knows where he is. I guess apparently the team tried to reach out, and nada. So that's just one of the things that we hit on. It's Leanna in Plymouth wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Leanna.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. The last I heard, Thomas was over in Middleton, Mass. I don't know if he still resides there or if he decided to move someplace far, far away to be on his own.
Leanna, state your sources.
Loved his yoga moves, but I don't think that...
Okay, so I'm just going to let you go. We're not playing Tim Thomas unless you have something for me.
Where's Tim Thomas?
We're not playing Where's Timmy.
I thought she said something about yoga, so maybe he takes yoga classes there.
I think she was going into his style of play.
Okay.
But I'm not playing this game on the air.
I heard he's running the mini golf course.
Thank
there.
You, exactly. What's he doing in Middleborough?
Middleton. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard he was in the Lake Champlain area.
So this we're not doing this. If you have something constructive to say about Thomas coming back or his relationship with the team or whatever, we'll allow a little bit of it.
I think he's in New Hampshire.
You know that we don't need to get political. I don't care about that. I think it'd be a tremendous moment if he came back and waved the flag. That's pretty much the extent of it.
I saw him in a pickup truck at a red light.
Can we start a GoFundMe page? He does athlete speakers things for 10 grand.
So wait a minute. Are we tracking him down? Are we getting something?
There's a website called Athlete Speakers. And his fee range is 10 to 20 grand.
It's not that expensive for some of these guys.
We can get Beasley to spring for that.
He's available for corporate appearances, speaking engagements, meet and greets, autograph signings, and endorsements.
When was the last time that page was updated? Like, can we tell how old that is?
That's not my problem. I just have this detail.
If it's from like 6 years ago, that's kind of a problem. I'm just kidding. I think that's also a great story. What happened to this guy?
I think we get a better chance of finding him on the dock.
I'm
going to
see if I can book him. Can I get your credit card number?
This guy should be a giant.
I saw him running lifts at Cranmore.
But we're not doing that. Jason in the car.
He's got camo. He's
this may be
the
last
trees.
Tim Thomas take that I go ahead, Jason.
Hey, guys. People got to remember, after he won the Stanley Cup, he was the first guy to kind of say, hey, I don't want to go to the White House for political reasons, and That didn't resonate well with the Massachusetts fan base, and I think that kind of turned him off to Boston in general.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's the first one we made a big deal about, I think, which maybe is fair, unfair. There were, you know, Theo and those guys missed before that. We can go back into that whole crap, which I just don't want to, okay? But it always felt to me like Thomas's problems went beyond the Bruins or Boston or things of this nature.
I mean, anytime you used to ask people about him, you remember what they always used to say? Well, he's a goalie. They're a little different.
But they would say him legitimately out there.
Yeah, but my point, but I guess what I'm saying is it was a euphemism. They always covered for him, at least as long as he was here. And then at the end, it was, you know, he's a different cat. So look, it's too bad though. You raise a good point.
I mean, this is my point that he should. I feel this way about Schilling too. It's like should be across the board idolized, lionized, should be exalted in this town. And should be there for those moments to stand for that moment in time, which was as important as any in the organization. And he should be the guy. And it should be no crap attached to it. And there is with Schilling, unfortunately. Thomas, it's less so. It's more of a mystery. But either way, what a moment that is. If he's waving the flag out of nowhere, there's Tim Thomas.
I mean, that would be great. I mean, because what he did that postseason was really off the charts. I mean, he was phenomenal.
How should we describe our corporate event we're inviting him to for 10 grand?
10 minutes?
Mazfest.
I need an event description here.
Must have solid landline. No pleasantries. 7 minutes. Tops. To discuss...
The place of politics and hockey.
No, we're not doing that.
No politics done.
We're not doing that. Well, check it out, Jimmy. I mean, you use your judgment.
I'm filling out this form right now as we speak. So
just quickly, wasn't Schilling at opening at the ring ceremony this year?
So he started to come back. He should be there, but I don't feel like he's the staple that he should be.
No, that's right. But it feels like that one's getting better, at least. Like it's thawing.
It should.
And in the case of Thomas, like, honestly, it didn't even occur to me until you said it. I said, right, he should have been there. Should have been Thomas.
Should have been the guy.
Yeah, absolutely, he should have been.
There's the moment. There's the moment. You have a moment like that. That pregame ceremonies, they put a lot into it. Let's have a real moment, shall we? And bring this guy and bring him out of nowhere. All of a sudden, here's Tim Thomas back at the Garden for the first time in whatever, 7 years. First time seen in public in 5 years. Whatever. There's a moment. But either, you know, I mean, other than that, just... Those of you covering the Bruins, like, enough of the Bobby Orr goal. I got it. Let's go find Tim Thomas. A little bit of a better story. What happened to him? Mike in Danvers. Go ahead, Mike. Mike Hall. Okay, babe, you can call us back. Shane in the car. You're up next with Felger and Maz. Hi, Shane.
Hi, yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk about Chara's role in the team and his leadership. I don't know if you saw last week. He did this interview, and he talked about how when he came up into the league, he really hated how there was this disconnect between the younger players and the veterans. And I think it's the Bruins have really responded to him, and it really resonates with the entire guys, unlike the Celtics, of course.
Well,
and I think for a franchise that's always kind of been defined by its big number one defenseman, I'd really like to see them win another cup for him so he can stand pretty much shoulder to shoulder with the other guys.
Me too. But he'll never stand shoulder to shoulder with Bork and Orr. Those guys were better. So, sorry. But he can be next in line. The thing about the famous story with Char and the same famous little detail with Char is that he doesn't let anyone call the young guys rookies.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't use the word and doesn't allow the older players to call them as rookies because he feels that separates the older, you know, creates a little divide in the team, and that's so we don't call them rookies. They're on the team. They're capable of being here, and they're teammates. They're not rookies.
Don't you love that?
Oh, tremendous.
I mean, again, he's like, to me, he is like, you know, in terms of the values that he possesses, like the value system he puts in, could you ask for a better leader? 42 years old, works his ass off, sees a 19-year-old walk in the room and says to the 35-year-old guy, you treat him just like you treat me. You know, don't go treating him any differently, because at the end of the day, we all got to put on the same uni and fight against the same side.
You're saying Kyrie's not doing the same thing?
I didn't notice that with Kyrie.
No, it's a little bit different, a little different approach.
A different vibe.
More of your thoughts on Game 1 right after this.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or gambling help. HelplineMA.org.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180
actually started when my daughter was born. And at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome. Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It was so sweet to win, but it hurts to lose. Like, that'll never leave you. It's going to haunt me.
Here comes the Shin. He shoots, he scores! Braden Shin! Tarasenko shoots, he scores! Tarasenko! And the Blues, a minute into the second, have taken a 2-0 lead.
The second goal, it was my bad, you know, and it's not like they made a great play or something. You know, we know we have a lot of skills in our group, so we knew the goals would come eventually.
Corrali over the line, high slot, into the far circle. Centers deflected, they score! It's Connor Clifton! McAvoy wheels over the line, high slot. Shoots, he scores! Corrali shoots, he scores!
Focus for us, I think, is just playing our game, and we're good when we're skating and we're hard on pucks. And I think the physicality just comes out just naturally from some of our guys just to compete in us. And you saw that, like, with the hit from Torrey. And
Cruel came in and just hammered one of the Blues. I think that was Robert Thomas.
I'm just glad I got a haircut a few days ago.
he just got a haircut a couple days ago, so it was looking pretty good.
Hey, they just showed Robert Kraft on the video board.
Oh, boy.
There's some videos I guess he doesn't mind being a part of.
Oh! Held in by Marchand. Shoots, he scores! Brad Marchand got to the loose puck at the far point, and with the empty net, he drills it home to give the Bruins a 4-2 lead in game one.
Here, I think we picked up our game a little bit. We got a little more physical, and we started moving our feet and moving the puck, and we ended up spending more time in their end and didn't give them as much room, and I think that's kind of when we started taking the game.
Last, Jimmy Stewart's look at game one. What are yours? Mike in the truck. Go ahead, Michael.
Belger. Hockey. Yes. Thank God.
Yes, Mike.
You know, if they win, or when they win this year, you know what they're going to be talking about, right?
No.
The two young kids, because I think they've stepped it up across the board all season. Every time the top line's getting shut down or not having a good night, they stepped it up. They stepped it up last night. That's why they won. So I'll let you talk about that.
Okay, babe. I think they're a little less young. I mean, this is Crowley's third playoff. This is McAvoy's third playoff. This is Carlo's first playoff, but it's his fourth year. And not that these are veterans, but maybe that's all adding up too. Most of these guys have been through it.
I mean, it's definitely adding up.
I mean, that's not, so Clifton's young. I'm trying to think who else is, again, it's Carlo's first playoff, but there's an asterisk there.
Yeah. The other thing is, with all due respect, and listen, I love those guys too. Krejci had a renaissance year, you know. Bergeron and Marchand are still, like, you know, one of the best two-man tandems in hockey. Like, let's not go too far with the young guys thing.
No, they have a nice blend.
They do. Yeah, and I think...
But this team is no longer inexperienced. I mean, I think that's wrong to say. They've all been through it. They've all been through it. Not all. Whatever. 90% of the team has been through it, have been through playoff series, wins and losses.
And don't forget Coyle and Johansson.
Veterans who've been through many of them. Many of them. So they do have a nice little blend there on that. Steven in Northbridge. Go ahead, Steven.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say there was a few good plays last night, but there was two that really stood out to me. One, Torrey Krug's big hit with no headgear on that got the crowd going. And then Chara, in the most subtle way, breaking what's-his-face's stick in front of the net, I thought was so funny. Thanks, guys.
Okay. It's funny that you didn't get the call. or it's funny that the Blues didn't get the call. It was another example of officiating helped you out in this game. Let me just ask you that again. Well, let me ask you. I think it did. I think you got the benefit of the officiating. Not necessarily why you won. You were the better team. But look, the whole thing changed in the second period when you got on the board and then went on the power play four consecutive times, which is really rare in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You get four straight. They usually like to level them off. And you were 4-1 in power plays at one point and ended up 5-2. They usually don't allow that kind of gap. So I think you got the benefit of the calls last night. And that Chara one was a huge one. They're on their one power play in the third period. They're down a goal on the power play. And Chara breaks Bozak's stick with a slash, which is called in the regular season all the time. Not here. So I just think you got the breaks.
Look, at one point when it was 4-1 in power plays, you know, I looked over to some people sitting next to me and said, you're not getting the next one.
I said, yeah, get your PK ready.
Absolutely. You knew that was coming. He said, the next penalty is going to be on the Bruins with the way that thing went. Because the first call of the game was in St. Louis's favor, and then the next four were all for the Bruins. Four in a row, really, like you said.
Do you think the Bruins were flopping out there?
Yep, I do. And again, when I say flopping, I'm not telling you they weren't penalties. I would tell you they dressed them up a little bit.
Yeah, they were just sold a little bit better, yeah, but they were.
There's no question they did. I told you, and I went back and watched the Clifton one this morning. And on that play, Clifton was peeking. He knew he was going to get hit, and he was ready to help sell it. So it was a penalty. It was a really dumb hit by Sundqvist. What a jackass. Like, you couldn't be any dumber on that play than to commit that penalty under those circumstances, as far out as he was in the middle of the ice.
Well, and again, so I'd say the same thing about that one and the Sunderland one. Is it Edmondson? Who is it?
Edmondson on Backes.
Edmondson on Backes. So they're both sort of questionable. The Bruins helped them. But they're both in the middle of the ice in front of everybody to see on really non-threatening plays that weren't, you know, they weren't scoring chances and they weren't anywhere close to the nets.
I mean, Backes by definition is non-threatening.
It's never a scoring chance. And you're in the middle of the ice with both refs looking at you.
Stupid. Stupid.
And we told you this on the pregame yesterday in our lead-up show that the refs, Sutherland is what I was thinking of, Sutherland, Kelly Sutherland and Steve Cazzari, were the refs who have heavy whistles and call a lot of penalties. So if you scouted that going into the game, if you know, generally speaking, the playoffs are called more now like the regular season than they ever have been. Not that they're exactly like the regular season, but it's closer to it. And so just know the situation, the referees that are on the ice, the way it's being called across the league, and the team you're facing with a 35% power play, and you would say to yourself, maybe we should be a little carefuler versus, you know, hitting guys with questionable shots in the middle of the ice for everyone to see. And I think so. I think the Bruins sold it. I think the Bruins got the benefit of good officiating, but I also think the Blues were stupid. So I think all those things are true.
Yeah, it's not. They're not mutually exclusive. Again, that's why I say, like, you know, did the Bruins dress them up? Yep. But they were penalties. You idiots. Like, the Sundqvist one to me blew my mind. Because honestly, as good as the Bruins, or, you know, as much as they woke up after the Clifton goal that made it 2-1, when I was watching it again, the real jump came after the McAvoy goal. They got a boost after the first goal. There's no question. The second one completely changed the game. Completely. And then all of a sudden, St. Louis is running backwards. Like, that was a huge, huge penalty on Sundqvist.
We've got Craig in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Craig.
Hey, guys. It may be a little extreme, but I am having a hard time finding a way for St. Louis to come back in this series.
Craig, don't be stupid. I say that with all the love in my heart. It's one game. It can change in a second.
No, I get that. A couple reasons why I think they have a hard time doing it. The Bruins have continually shown throughout the playoffs two things. A, when they get down, they're not going to quit. And B, when they find out that they're better than the team they're playing, they drop the hammer. They found out they were better than Carolina in game one, and they dropped the hammer in game two. Last night, I think they discovered they were better than St. Louis. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next game when they get the chance to go out there and do that. St. Louis could very well step up their game, but I don't think we saw the best of the Bruins in that second period either. It was a gut check moment for St. Louis in the third period. I don't think they were able to elevate, and Perrone tried when he went after Krug, the smallest guy we have, and 10 seconds later, Krug fired back as well. So I'm interested to see what happens. I just think that the Bruins are in position to really put it to them.
They are. I'm just going to cut you there in a minute. When you have a 2-0 lead and the other team's building and you don't close, you've got to say you left one on the table. And does that leave a mark? And we'll see. So I agree with that sort of overall thing. And I would also agree St. Louis certainly didn't elevate. When you've got 11 shots through two periods in the Stanley Cup playoffs against a team that wasn't ready to go, you know, had all that rust, which was legit. That's something not right about that, too.
I mean, really, in about a period and a little more than a half, they had 6 shots.
Ugh.
They had 3 in each period, right? They had 3 in the second and 3 for the majority of the third. 6 shots. The whole game was played in their end of the ice, and the power plays were a factor on that. There's no question. But even so, there were no threats, none, nothing.
Here's Nate in Danvers. Go, Nate.
Yeah, on the whole flag-waving thing, there's only 2 people that I would want to wave the flag. It would be Orr, and it would be Tim Thomas. And I would love it if it was Tim Thomas on the night that they actually clinched the cup, because the place would just go absolutely bonkers.
Yep. That kind of moment deserves that kind of guy. So let's just do that and not worry about if they've come out before. So, Bork, Espo, the big guns with rings, those are the guys who should be waving the flag at this time.
Espo would be a good one.
Belichick, Brady, of course, fine. Ortiz, that sort of thing. But I don't know. Or Tim Thomas, Espo.
Keep it in the hockey family.
Let's do that. Jake in Boston, quickly. Oh, too bad you weren't ready to go. You were going to bug me anyway, I could tell.
Yeah, the subject line said Tim Thomas animosity.
I could tell. You want to call Howie. I don't have the number, but you can get that easily enough. Call Howie. I think that's Jake in Boston. He wants to get angry. Call Howie and get angry as you want with that. Here's an update from Murray. When we come back, we got just a real quick Bill Buckner Red Sox follow. I just want to follow up from yesterday. I know a lot of you were off. You didn't hear our stuff on it yesterday. So I just want to reset it real quick when we come back right after Murray's update.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or Gambling Help LineMA.org.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my 4th week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything, and that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend, and that's something that for the longest time I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first, behind the back.
So just a quick little Bruins breather here. We did this yesterday, but I know a lot of you are on holiday, may not have heard it. So we just want to reset it because I find it interesting, the Bill Buckner thing and him being defined by that play. And it is too bad on a lot of levels. On some levels, it's not, though. And I'll just explain. My leadoff thing is that this ties into the Bruins thing a lot, because I've spent time here the last week or so railing on the Bobby Orr goal. Because I think Boston sports history has a couple of these things where it's not explained to you the real context of these plays. And the Bobby Orr thing, we just see ad infamy. Now, I didn't watch the NBC. They did a whole feature on it last night before the game, right?
Yep.
I was there. So I didn't see this. Did they mention anywhere in that 5-minute feature, 2-minute feature, 3-minute feature that it was a 3-0 series and a 4-0 sweep, and that the St. Louis Blues were an expansion team that was swept by the Bruins for the 3rd consecutive time in the finals? They went 12-0, 0-12 in the finals over three straight years. Did anyone mention that?
Not that I remember.
Yeah, I'm guessing no. I was in the building.
I mean, I watched it this morning. No, I told you. I went back and watched it this morning, and I saw that, and I did stop at that part of it. And I don't remember it being in there.
I mean, and I, over the weekend, I read reams of stuff because now I'm sort of obsessed with the thing. DuPont, Shaughnessy, the usual suspects, Buckley. I'm sure Doris Kearns Goodwin somewhere is putting together a documentary, and Ken Burns is doing something too, waxing nostalgic in their garden in Cambridge. Blah, 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 the Bobby Orr and the summers of our youth and blah. Did anyone mention it was a sweep? And the goal was sort of really just a non-factor? Is anyone going to mention that you swept the Blues?
No, it's an inconvenient truth. It devalues the moment, so you're never going to hear that.
That we're swept three straight years as an expansion. So, like, that drives me crazy. It drives me crazy that people don't mention the 1967 Red Sox actually lost. The Impossible Dream was a team that lost. Not won, lost. So those are, like, little hashtag Boston sports history falsehoods that are just sort of propagated to, what, sell a story, enhance a picture, whatever, create a memory, or, you know, all those things. And I just think it's a little frustrating for people to look back and go, oh, you swept them? What's the big deal with that goal? So it's not mentioned. I think the Buckner thing falls into the same category, and it's unfortunate for him. Not enough people mention the game was tied. Oh, did you know, 18-year-old Red Sox fan, it was also game six? That so the way it's sort of portrayed is that the champagne is there, it's ready to be cracked, and if he fielded the ball and stepped on the bag, they're drinking champagne because they're champions. That's sort of like, that's how it's portrayed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just like the Bobby Orr goal is portrayed as game seven, win or go home, you know, sort of do or die sort of thing. It wasn't. And the Buckner thing, the game was tied, and it was game six. So not only are you not popping champagne, you're actually trudging back to the dugout after you've blown a two-run lead with nobody on and two outs. Clemens is out of the game with a blister or whatever.
They were one strike away.
You've already burned your bullpen. Now you've got to come back out and play the next inning. How do you think they would have fared had Buckner actually fielded that ball? Something tells me they weren't hanging on that day. And then, oh, by the way, is it ever told you that in game seven you were actually leading 3-0?
3-0, they were up.
So this is sort of unfair to Buckner. And it's another one of these things that how come Doris Kearns and Buckley and Shaughnessy and the rest of these old farts don't tell you the actual context of these games?
Because, again, it's about the imagery, just like the Bobby Orr goal is about the picture. Without the picture, and I think Orr even said this last night, he said, without the picture, I'm not sure that people, you know, someone said it, that, you know, if the picture didn't exist, it wouldn't have been the moment it was. But and it's the same thing with Buckner. It's the imagery of this, you know, this guy hobbling behind the bag and the most basic little grounder that goes through your legs just like you're a six-year-old, right? It's the simplest error that every kid made in Little League. And that's what it was that stuck with people, was the image of it, I think. And Buckner, the sad part, too, is Buckner was a good player.
But here's where it is fair, and that is, that's why these games are so meaningful to us.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why the Bruins did a 25 rating last night in town, and that's why the Torrey Krug thing is, if you hang on, becomes something that's on a kid's wall. Do kids even have posters anymore? I don't know. But that is something that becomes an iconic moment, and that so that's...
And that's why David Ortiz is David Ortiz in some way, right?
So like, you can't have one without the other. If you fail in that spot, then it's going to be held up. And if you have a moment in that spot that you win, it's going to be held up. And that's why we put so much on it, because this is when it really matters. And so this is what makes it so great, and the weight and the moment. And so Bill Buckner, certainly at that time, those players weren't paid like they are now, but they're played very, very well. So he was a millionaire and made a lot of money playing a kid's game. And that's the trade-off, that you could find yourself in that spot and make the error, and That's the trade-off. That's the trade-off for making that money and being treated the way you're treated as a pro athlete. That if you don't, on some level it's not unfair. That's what they signed up for. But on the other level is, it'd be nice to get a little context with some of these things. In 67, they actually lost, Danny. Shaughnessy at least admits it to me. He says, like, yeah, you know, Dan will write these 5,000-word stories on the 67 Red Sox, and I'll say, Dan, it's interesting. Not once in there did you mention that they actually lost the World Series. He's like, yeah, it didn't come up. It's not a factor. It doesn't matter. It's what they represented. Okay, like at least you're... But a little context here. It was a sweep. You didn't win in 67. And, oh, by the way, the game was tied when that ball rolled through Buckner's legs. You had to go back into the dugout and then back out. Was it the 10th or the 9th that that happened?
No,
it was the 10th, wasn't it?
It was, I think it was the 11th.
Or the 11th, right. It was the next innings.
They had gotten two runs to go up 5-3. Well, we don't need to relive it.
But you would have had to come back out and keep playing, and I don't love your chances there after blowing that lead.
No, in fact, even when they were up in Game 7, there was a sense of impending doom. Like, oh, God, how are they going to get out of this? And then the Mets scored the next six. And, you know, it was, I mean, it just was, I'm telling you, I think it was the image. It was just that basic play. You know, you've mentioned this, too, the Fisk home run, right, in the 75 World Series. That's about the image. It's a walk-off, but if Fisk isn't running down the first baseline, waving his arms like a lunatic.
And you're so right to point out that the Carbo home run, the three-run homer to tie it in the first place, was a bigger hit.
It was a bigger hit. It was a pinch-hit three-run home run in the bottom of the eighth. They were down 6-3.
Yeah.
And he jacked one into the center field seats. It was like, you know, that was the one. That was the one that changed everything. Right? But because Fisk was, you know, dancing down the first baseline in his underwear, like, you know, all of a sudden that's the one everyone remembers. And I'm not taking anything away from Fisk.
Yeah, no.
He was a Hall of Fame player, right?
It's how those moments are being portrayed later.
But the imagery is what sticks with people. It's the image of it that sits in our head forever and never goes out. And so Buckner was a victim of that.
Okay, so there's your little Buckner Red Sox moment. We'll get back to your calls on whatever you want. I do want to reset the coaching from last night, especially on the Boston side and how the St. Louis Blues play and how their style translates to this series and the Bruins, right after this.
The Sports Hub.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or Gambling Help LineMA.org.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything, and that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
After the second goal, you seemed to get away from the Bergeron-Shen matchup. Give me your thinking for that.
Wasn't going our way, EJ. It was that simple. You know, Berge's line had a tough time finding their game tonight. The other guys were a little bit ahead of them in terms of their, you know, puck possession. And so we've used Corrali's line all year against good lines. So we decided to maybe go that route. Worked out for us tonight. We'll reevaluate on Wednesday. Or Coyle's line, I thought they were having a good night too. So a little more offense against offense. And they had the puck a lot. So I think that's one way you contain good lines. And usually Berge's line will have a lot of ozone puck possession, but for whatever reason tonight they weren't able to do it as much as they typically do.
All right, Bruce Cassidy discussing a key lineup move last night, which he doesn't do every game. And what I'm talking about this is, so he had the Bergeron line matched up against the St. Louis top line, Shen, Tarasenko, Schwartz, that line. And the Bergeron line was on the ice for the first two goals against. And not that, you know, the second one, that Pastrnak giveaway, was sort of not
horrendous.
Really the line's problem. It was just a complete boner by Pastrnak. But the fact is, that line was not great last night. And Cassidy he decides to put his fourth line up against the St. Louis first line. And that's when Corrali got going. And that sort of changed the game. And so it's, you know, a couple different levels there. One, that Cassidy's willing to make that kind of move. And again, he doesn't do that every game. There were some points earlier in these playoffs where, for example, Bergeron would get outplayed by Tavares. Remember the first couple of games of the Toronto series? Tavares sort of got the better of Bergeron. And Cassidy said, we're going to stick with it because we think our players are better and that's ultimately going to come through. And he got proven right. Barely. But they pulled it out. So ultimately, he stuck with that Bergeron line in that matchup and it won the day. In this game, he didn't stick with it. And he says, I'm going to switch it up. So he doesn't do that every time. And this one obviously proved to be the right call. So, you know, the fact that he's willing to make that move and the timing of that move worked perfectly. But also the fact that he's just able to say it in the postgame setting and say, yeah, my best player wasn't going or our best line wasn't going. And he's not throwing anyone under the bus. He's not ripping anybody. He's also not, you know, hucking a loogie at the media. He's being asked a question, answered a question like a human being. Apparently not hurting anyone's feelings, just sort of telling it like it is without throwing anyone under the bus. And a sort of refreshing little exchange there where you actually got some information, got how he felt about it. No one's the worse for it. No state secrets were spilled, and we're all okay. And so I just sort of like that part of it too. Says something that Cassie's in that kind of place with that team, old and young, that he can say, yeah, our best players weren't our best players tonight. There are other guys ahead of him.
I mean, to me, again, this comes back to he clearly communicates with his players because whatever he says to them privately, the public statement isn't any worse. Like, and it's just so rare. And it's just, you know, look, this is what happened. What do you want me to tell you? We're going to make a change. You guys aren't going. Don't worry about it. We'll go back to it the next game. But now we're going to change. And you know, he is. He's very dispassionate about it. And that's a strength. Because it doesn't come off as him, like, blaming anybody. It's just, this is what it was tonight, so we changed.
And further, when he's asked about the Crowley line and what's so good about him, it makes perfect sense to me, and I sort of understand the thinking, and boy, do I agree, by the way. Here's Cassidy just on what Crowley does well in that line.
This is what they do. You know, they possess pucks, they can skate, they play simple hockey, and I think against St. Louis, if you play north, especially, you know, for us being off as long as we were, we had to not get drawn into the fancy stuff, the east-west stuff, stuff that you're doing in practice because you don't have the competitive edge. And showed on the second goal, you know, just mismanaged the puck. Even the first one, we got a little loose. So at the end of the day, they're going to always play a straight line game. And sometimes they get rewarded, sometimes they don't, but they always play the same way. So that's what they did tonight. They got rewarded by going to the net. They're always good defensively. Noel will add the physicality. I think, you know, going back to the previous question, we made the switch. We need to be a little more physical against that line. I thought, you know, they were able to deliver that too.
Okay, I'm focused on the north, south, east, west stuff. When he says they don't play east-west, boy, did that stand out. Because that Bergeron, Pasternak, Marchand line, Maz, how much east-west dipsy do cross-ice passing did they try and do in that game last night?
And I can remember maybe one that got through there, and that was one that Marchand kind of fanned
whiffed on. Yeah.
But the rest of them didn't get through.
Oh, God.
And they kept doing it over and over and turning the puck over. Honestly, I think this is the number one reason why their power play. Look, they got one goal. It's 20%, five chances, right? One out of five. But given the level they were operating at, you were expected two, right? Like, you wanted another power play goal when you get five chances. And the fact is that I think the number one reason it didn't work is because they kept trying that stupid-ass cross-ice pass over and over and over again. It was driving me bananas.
Shoot the puck. For
shoot
God.
It.
Oh, my God.
There was one blatant one. Pasternak got the puck on the left-wing side at the face-off circle like he always does. He had time to shoot. I mean, he had time not even to one-time it, to, like, catch the pass and shoot. And he held on and went right back across again. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Would you shoot the flipping puck?
So bad.
Holy crap, just shoot the puck. It was driving me crazy.
And he knows that the Crowley line, they're just going to get it and go. And that's what it needed, especially coming off of that layoff where maybe you develop bad habits at practice where he's just sort of dipsy-doo screwing around at practice. Makes perfect sense to me.
It does, because again, you get bored. They got bored, I'm sure. They had 10 days off, 11 days off, and they started dinking around in practice and because they were bored. And so then it carries over into the game, and you're getting a little careless out there. So I thought the first period in particular, I thought they were wretched. That line was bad.
Meanwhile, on the other side, give me a thought on how St. Louis plays. How'd you feel about it?
The plotting style is just worse than I thought. It feels like they turned the game back 30 years for crying out, maybe more, maybe 40. like into the late 70s. I said to you earlier,
I have evidence of this. You know I
well,
do.
So, and I didn't even know this. So this should, you know, we were on the same wavelength. Like, I felt like, God, this is how the Bruins used to play. They used to dump the puck in, try to, you know, beat you up along the walls, lean on you, get the puck behind the goal, and then, you know, overpower you in front of the net. That's how the Bruins used to play over and over. And thankfully, and I give the Bruins a lot of credit for this, they don't do that anymore. But that's what the Blues do. That's what they do.
It's a very old school game. And it's why, stylistically, I liked the matchup from the start. They're not explosive. They're not a team that wants to skate end to end, skate at you, line rushes, things of that nature. And Cassie talked about this after the game, too. They're not a line rush kind of team. And those are the teams I think put the Bruins on their heels. Toronto, for sure. Tampa, if you faced them. Washington, with some of their offensive skill up front. That end to end, put you on your heels kind of teams. St. Louis doesn't want to do that. St. Louis wants to get past the red line, dump it in, get it behind your defense, and then go to work on the forecheck like it's, again, 1977, for crying out loud.
It's true. And if they don't, if the Bruins tighten it up a little, and obviously they were better in the last two periods, because I didn't like either of the first two goals. I mean, the second one's, you know, we don't even have to discuss that
one. Joke.
I didn't love the first one either. I thought the Bruins were a little sloppy in front of their own net. You know, Shen comes in, grabs it, skates in a couple of strides, and picks a corner, for crying out loud. Nobody closed on him at all, let alone cleared the rebound. If the Bruins can tighten that up, St. Louis can have a hard time scoring in this series.
But so St. Louis gets up 2-0, and they end up with 11 shots after the second period. I ask Amonte, he's like, they don't want to shoot. They don't want to create offense. They want to defend. That's how they're sort of built, and that's in their DNA. They want to defend, and they want to create offense off defense, but are off the forecheck. So they don't. That's not really their calling. They want to defend. Well, that's not got to, you know, that's sort of playing into the Bruins' hands there. You got to put pressure on them. Because you can get to some of their D. You can get to them. We saw Toronto do it. We saw Columbus do it at times. We saw Carolina do it a lot less. But those are the teams that give them problem. If you sit back, well, then you're just inviting the Bruins to wake up, which is what they did. I was stunned. The Blues, ranked 12th in shots per game in the playoffs. 12th out of 16 teams. Bruins are fourth. The Blues don't even, you know, they're not just, they don't, their call to arms is not pounding offense.
They don't push. They don't push. Again, if you like to use a basketball term, you say push the pace. They don't. And I was even surprised on the occasions where they dumped it in. I thought they would play the man. I thought they would try to knock you through the glass.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or gamblinghelplinema.org.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.